Welcome to Climate Champions episode number 25 with Desmond Wheatley. I'm Lee Krivat, and every Monday I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about what they do to help mitigate climate change, what their vision for the future is, and what made them motivated for the challenge. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. Desmond is president, CEO, and chairman of the board at Envision Solar International. On April 16th of 2019, Envision Solar announced its uplisting to the NASDAQ and trades under the symbol EVSI. Head on over to envisionsolar.com and check out the video at the bottom of the landing page to see the very cool EV Arc product. Shayna, can you explain what an EV Arc is?
Hi, Lee. EV Arc. EV, as we all know, stands for electric vehicle. Because of global warming, our society is doomed. So in order to save our future society, we are going to be sending pairs of electric vehicles on an arc like Noah's Ark. And two by two, they will drive up the ramp to be sent into a greater future.
Oh, very close. Except these arcs only fit one EV at a time, and I doubt that they would float. But they are trying to save our future society. Shayna Krivat is my daughter and the author of volumes 1 and 2 of Tales of Mundane Magic, both collections of short stories that follow two teenage sisters as they explore their modern magical world. They have apps that cast spells, buildings held up by enchantments, and the faithful companionship of, who else, their ghost dog. Nothing too strange happens to Gertie and Bridget, but things might not be as mundane as they appear. The perfect gift for 12 to 16-year-olds and beyond. Tales of Mundane Magic Volume 2 comes out on June 28, 2019, and is available wherever books are sold. Just type in Krivat to find it, and check out the other Krivat-authored books while you're there, or find it on shainacrivat.com. That's S-H-A-I-N-A Krivat.com. As Shayna said, the EV stands for electric vehicle. ARC stands for Autonomous Renewable Charger. It is the world's only transportable and optionally permanent EV charging infrastructure solution. It deploys in under 4 minutes without any disruptive, time-consuming, and expensive permitting, construction, or electrical work. The EV ARC has solar with tracking on top, a traction pad that fits into a standard parking space that you drive onto on the bottom, and a support pole connecting them. Next to the pole is an EV charger on one side and a battery to store the generated solar on the other. Basically, a truck comes and drops it off, and poof, you have 100% renewable energy for your vehicle. It even has Wi-Fi. Envision Solar International is a San Diego-based sustainable technology innovation company. They invent, patent, design, engineer, and manufacture unique and advanced renewably energized electric vehicle charging, outdoor media, and energy security systems. Desmond has served as the CEO since 2011 and as chairman of the board since 2016. He has 2 decades of senior international management experience in technology systems integration, energy management, communications, and renewable energy. James Henry Bedell, take it away. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm here in foggy, overcast, drizzly San Diego here in June with Desmond Wheatley. He's the president and CEO and chairman of the board at Envision Solar International. Welcome to Climate Champions.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me, Lee.
Oh, my pleasure. With regard to climate change, can you talk about a memorable moment or memorable moments that excited you to do something about it?
Yeah, it's definitely moments rather than a moment. I mean, I'd have to go all the way back to my childhood, frankly, and I was very fortunate in that I was brought up in a very pretty part of Scotland, had really been unspoiled by industry or real estate development or anything else. But like lots of pretty places, it wasn't long before people wanted to come in and start spending money and putting concrete and blacktop on you know, what had otherwise been green pastoral land. And I watched my father fight very hard against that sort of thing. So while that wasn't to do with climate change, it was definitely to do with just sort of looking after the environment and you know, trying to keep things, cherish things, frankly, which are worth cherishing and worth looking after. I had the great honor of having dinner with Buzz Aldrin many years ago in Los Angeles, and just talking to him about how it was to look back on the surface of the planet from space. His comments about the fact that there were no international boundaries visible, you know, there was nothing worth coveting or lusting after. It was all worth protecting. That was very, you know, seminal for me. And then I'm again from space, just looking at that photograph that was taken some 750 billion miles from the planet of just a tiny little dot floating around in the great abyss, made me realize how very fragile this place is. I've traveled a great deal. Not, I haven't lived and worked in all over the world, but certainly half of it. And having seen a great deal of it, it just makes me very, very clear to me that it's worth looking after. It's a fragile place, but a very beautiful place. And, you know, I've got children. I want to pass on a legacy to them that's worth passing on.
You've moved into the next area that I like to talk about, which is personal motivations.
Look, I'm a person that believes that one should look at one's responsibilities before one's rights. We should realize that everything that you do has an impact. None of us have the right to take, really. I think we all have the responsibility to give and to create something of value and to always make everywhere and everybody and everything a little better than we find it. And so we live in a highly consumer-driven culture. And the world, the whole world's going that way. There are an awful lot of human beings that don't live like that yet, but they want to. And so we're all going to have to get much better about how we do that. And I don't say stop consuming. I just say we have to do it in ways that are very, very responsible and that make sure that there's something left in the bank, as it were, when the future generations come along.
When you talked about what motivated you to get involved in climate change, you talked about Buzz Aldrin and your dad and traveling and seeing the world. What did you first do yourself to try to help?
Well, first of all, a confession. You're speaking to a reformed polluter. I've done my fair share of things of which I'm not proud, and you know, professionally. And not just from a point of view of polluting, but also some other, just other professional things, which I wouldn't repeat, frankly. So I think, you know, there comes a time as one matures and starts to realize, again, that it's not all about taking. It's about giving and about doing things that are responsible rather than just finding ways to feather one's own nest. It made me realize that I'd been in the Middle East for a while, doing some things that I'm relatively proud of and some things I wasn't so proud of. When I came back from there, I had a choice to make about what I was going to do with the rest of my life. And I made a very deliberate choice to make sure that that was going to be something that I could be proud of rather than just be enriched by.
And do you remember your thinking process and coming up with that choice? And what was that choice specifically?
Yeah, definitely. I remember it starkly, actually. I mean, I knew that I had choices professionally. I'd had a very varied and diverse professional background, and that makes choice available to you. And so it was very clear to me that I needed to make a choice which was in some area, some element which was going to reduce waste, reduce damage, increase sustainability, whatever that meant. And so I started looking at a lot of different areas. I was very interested in waste to energy. In fact, waste to energy might have been the way that I was really first sort of immersed in sustainability. I like the idea of turning garbage into electricity. I like the idea of extracting water from municipal solid waste, which is about 50% of the weight of municipal solid waste is water. Lots of places in the world don't have enough water, and yet they're filling up their landfills with waste. So a combination of those two things was very interesting to me. However, at the time, and this was back in the very early aughts, there weren't many opportunities there for commercial solutions in that area. But that did sort of, it informed some of my thinking and it introduced me to some people. And actually, it was through those introductions that I first got involved with Envision Solar.
Do you happen to know the company Anaergia?
No.
It's just north of San Diego. They have a great process for turning garbage into biomethane.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that.
I will introduce you.
Yeah, I'd like to meet them. like to meet them.
It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
When you meet people that don't believe there's a need to fight climate change, how do you talk to them so that they might understand?
Well, I think there's an interesting sort of separation amongst people who don't believe that there's anthropomorphic climate change to start with. Some people are willing to listen. Some people are, you know, they're they'll look at the evidence. It's an evidence based. It's scientific and evidence based, and some people are willing to look at that.
Well, it seems like if they look at the evidence, they've already understood that there is climate change.
Yes, but I think it's important to remember, Lee, that a lot of people don't want to see things which are uncomfortable or which require change. People are comfortable. That's one of the things that humanity has done for itself, and to the greatest extent in the last 30 or 40 years, is we've made an awful lot of people comfortable who were not comfortable before. And these are positive things. I mean, if you look at the number of people who have been brought out of poverty just in the last couple of decades, it's astonishing. If you look at the level of comfort that we're all used to, it's astonishing what humanity's done post-Second World War, certainly, but really in the last 10 or 20 or 30 years. And having just sort of arrived at that point, to go back to them and say, oh, by the way, you may have to give up some of these things that you take for granted now, is very worrying for them. So I think it's important to put it to them in terms that help them realize that when we talk about giving up things, we're not necessarily talking about giving up security or comfort or luxuries even. We're just talking about giving up the mechanisms which deliver them now and coming up with new mechanisms. So I would say, in terms of speaking to deniers or people who are not willing to take the step, if I feel there's an opening to show them that there's another way, a better way that won't require them to make sacrifices, won't require them to do anything that would make them uncomfortable or feel that their families weren't safe or anything like that, then I'm going to try and demonstrate that to them. If I'm just dealing with what I refer to as angry oil guy, and I meet angry oil guy a lot, right? Angry oil guy thinks that I'm responsible for the downfall of America because, you know, there's plenty of oil and there's plenty of coal and we're crazy and arrogant to think that we could be changing the planet in any way. I've got to tell you, I don't spend a lot of time with them, because I think sometimes when people are just absolutely convinced, or they're determined to be convinced, determined not to listen. In fact, they have other motivations for not listening. Time is better spent moving on to the next target.
So I know what you do at Envision Solar, but I think it's very interesting and everybody else would like to know too.
This is my favorite story, so I'm glad you asked. Yeah, I mean, going back to when I was looking at what I was going to do to make a difference, it was quickly apparent to me that the combination of transportation as we do it today and the generation of electricity, the two things in the US, for example, account for almost, well, 70% of greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, it was more than 70% at the time. Now, we've got better the way we're doing things today, but it's still in the high 60s. So transportation, generation of electricity, those two things combined, almost three quarters, or better than two thirds, of the greenhouse gas emissions, the damaging things that we're doing to the environment. So what a target, right? I was absolutely determined to try to find something that had the biggest impact possible, and yet was easy to understand. I wanted to do something that I could explain to people at dinner parties and have them very quickly get the hang of it, and yet have it be massively impactful as well. And so Envision Solar, in the simplest possible terms, we invent and we patent and we design, engineer, and even manufacture products which undo those two sources of greenhouse gas emissions. And the way we do that is by making solar-powered electric vehicle charging stations. So our customers and their guests and visitors drive on sunshine as a result of our products. We are the future of fuel here. And to take out 70% of the harmful greenhouse gas emissions that are being produced in the United States today is absolutely the most impactful thing that I could possibly hope to be involved with. And believe me, I looked at many different things. As I say, I started out looking at waste energy. I love tidal power because it's the only sort of source of renewable energy which is not impacted by climate change. But at the end of the day, getting people driving on sunshine was by far the most impactful thing I could do. And that's what we do at this fantastic company.
The first time that I met you, I think, was when you put Envision Solar sun tracking systems in the parking lot at the Energy Innovation Center for SDG&E.
That's right.
How long ago was that? I can't even remember.
It was a long time ago. Now, I started here in the first quarter of 2010, and it wasn't too long after that that we did that project. And that was actually part of the evolution of the company. In those days, we were still doing projects. We were still installing those types of structures. We've since transitioned. Now, we're now all product. And the reason for that is just because we can be much more impactful. It occurred to me very early on that we would only be able to have so much impact when we had our entire team committed to doing individual projects, as opposed to what we have now, which is a factory environment where we can produce mass produce and sort of Henry Ford style mass production of climate action products, right? And that's what the world needs. I mean, we don't need a few projects. We don't need a few demonstrations here and there. What we need is almost like a warlike footing in the way we're approaching this. We need to be mass producing things in the way America famously did in the Second World War. We need to be pouring that material at the problem and overcoming the problem, frankly, with our innovation and our willingness to work hard.
All that's missing is the motivation to do it. We already can do it.
As I've said many times before, we have the money, we have the technology. What we lack is the will. And the will is largely driven by understanding. When people understand what's going on, they quickly develop the will. Lack of understanding, lack of education is the thing that prevents people from having the will to make the change. Part of the reason I'm so happy to do these sorts of podcasts, because anytime somebody new listens, understands more, and gets the will to make change, they'll quickly realize that the money and the technology is available.
That's why I'm doing the podcast, to get the word out that we can do this.
Yeah,
I think it was 2012 when we talked again and you showed me the new product, the EV Arc.
EV Arc, yes.
Yeah. And I think my comment back then, and I might still agree with this comment, was that if it was hooked up to the grid, because at the time you didn't hook it up to the grid, that it could give the grid energy when it needed it and take energy when someone parked there, but there was nothing left in the battery.
Yes.
And I thought those were important things, especially because of the cost at the time. But I also felt that with a reduction in cost, as solar and energy storage became less expensive, that it would make it worth it, even if you had to waste energy when the battery was full, or sometimes it wouldn't have energy when a vehicle came to it. So where are you in your thinking with regard to that right now?
I think you were absolutely right then, and to some extent you're still right today. It's important to first point out that the energy that we're wasting is energy that is already being wasted, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's one of the terrible things, you know, nature has provided us with this limitless source of clean and magnificent energy, and what do we as humans do? We just throw it all away. We'd rather find ways of damaging the place that we live than taking advantage of nature's free gifts, or God's free gifts, if you believe in that, whatever. However you come across that you're thinking, it's a crazy idea. Look, it makes a good deal of sense theoretically to connect our products to the grid because of the things that you mentioned. We can be a fantastic grid balancing tool. The grid can provide power to our units so that when they're exhausted by too much use, if there is such a thing, then we have this other source of power. And the grid acts as a storage for us. However, the crucial thing to understand is that the world... This is not just a US opportunity, this is a global opportunity. The world is going to need millions, tens of millions, in fact, of electric vehicle charging stations in the coming decades. There are today 1.2 billion cars on the road. There will be 2 billion cars on the road in 2040. All of them will be electric. All of them will need to charge somewhere. And the only way that we're going to be able to get there in that time is to come up with a rapidly deployable and highly scalable solution. Now, as soon as you say rapidly deployable and highly scalable, you just took the grid out of the mix.
I know that.
Yes.
So expensive.
Well, it's expensive. It's an permitting. Incredibly timing consuming. Yes. So to give you a couple of examples, in California, and we have a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract with the state of California to provide the driving on sunshine experience to government entities. In California, it takes an average of 18 months to go through the planning, permitting, environmental impact, construction, digging trenches, pouring concrete, pulling wires and all that, to get an EV charger in a parking space, somewhere where people want to park a vehicle. 18 months. In New York City, it takes fully 24 months to do the same thing. Because there's a process you have to go through, planning and engineering, everything else. Now, we do the same thing in 4 minutes. 4 minutes.
I've seen you drop one off
exactly.
Out of a truck, yeah.
Right. So if you're going to win a war, you can't use this sort of siege mentality and that it won't matter if it takes us decades, because this is a war that we need to win in the next couple of decades. We cannot wait until 2050, 2060, 2070, while the grid catches up and transmission and distribution infrastructure is built and another 1.5 terawatt hours of generation are put online. We don't have the time to do that. We need a rapidly deployed and highly scalable solution if we're going to win this. And it's a war on pollution that we're fighting. And we've developed what I like to consider the sort of landing craft of the war on pollution. If you've seen those old films of the boats coming up on the beaches in Normandy and in the islands in the Pacific, that's what we've developed, something that's rapidly produced, highly scalable, rapidly deployable, and we're going to win the war on pollution using it.
one of the thoughts I've had for a while about your product and Pi Energy's product. Mm. They make a super lightweight solar. Mm. If they could get the efficiency up, I thought maybe it would reduce cost in your structure.
Yes.
And in what you pay for solar as well. But I know that's not too much. It's really the cost of the structure.
Yes. And the other thing is weight is our friend. Weight's very, very important to what we do. So remember that the EV Arc, which is electric vehicle autonomous, underline autonomous, renewable charger. Remember, it's not connected to the ground by anything at all except by Isaac Newton's theory, gravity, right? And so weight is our friend. And to put that in context for you, think of something which we just drop off. We don't bolt it to the ground. We don't glue it to the ground. We don't pour concrete. We don't do anything. We just drop it off and we drive away from it and it's ready to operate. Now, that product that I just described to you survived the hurricanes in the Caribbean last year. 185 mile an hour, category 5 winds. Not connected to the ground in any way at all, but survived those hurricane winds. And we got a letter from the government down there saying that our product was the only thing that survived.
That's awesome.
Continued operating everything else. So weight is important to us. Cost savings are also important to us, but actually less important than the thing that you brought up, which was this increased energy density or efficiency. We need the highest energy density that we can get because we're trying to get as many driving miles as we can out of a single parking space. Remember, the product fits inside a single parking space. So to be meaningful, we're going to have a lot of energy density. And that's why we have tracking and everything else that we threw everything in the kitchen sink at energy density.
Yeah, you might be able to put it on the pole. The Pi Energy product might be able to go on the pole. It might be able to go even on the base.
Yes.
It might be worth it just to get more capability.
And we'll take all the energy production we can get, definitely.
What led you to where you are today? Tell me about your background.
Perhaps a not typical story. I often wonder what I'm doing here. You know, I suppose like many people, I probably feel like a fraud every now and again. As a very young man, I went to sea. So I didn't do the usual path of going off to university and everything like that. I went to sea when I was 16 years old. I was in the engine room, so ended up with a marine engineering background. You learn great things when you go to sea. You can't be relying on anybody but yourself. You have to become very self-reliant, and that's really important, a very important lesson I've taken through my years in business, frankly. When you're out in the middle of the Atlantic and something breaks, there's no hardware store to go to. No one's coming to help you. Self-reliance is important in business.
If you look at a presentation from Hawaii Electric, they will show themselves in the middle of the ocean all alone and then talk about why they need to develop a strategy for 100% renewables so they could be independent.
Well, that's right. And actually, the other thing about that marine background that I had was it informed a lot of my thinking about sort of the microgrid environment, because every ship at sea is a microgrid. And furthermore, not just a microgrid, but a microgrid which has to plug into local shore power, which is different voltages, different everything you can imagine in each port that you go into around the world. And because I was in the engine room, I was responsible for an awful lot of that. I also learned how very unreliable generators are when I was in the engine room. I mean, you probably spent 90% of my time working on generators when I was at sea. And again, that's informed my thinking all these years later, 30 plus years later now, coming up with solutions which don't involve diesel or gasoline to power generators, because, you know, energy security is a big part of what we offer here, just a more reliable source of power than the grid provides.
I do think we're coming to a tipping point for islands and microgrids where we will be able to put in solar and storage and go.
I totally agree with that. But where it gets really exciting is where we don't view an island doesn't have to be surrounded by water, right? An island can be anywhere we want it to be. And for me, highly distributed, highly diverse generation and storage infrastructure is the future of power for everybody.
I agree with you 100%. I think islands first, because they pay so much for the diesel today.
Yes.
So they're the great testing lab.
Yeah.
Once the cost comes down and we understand it and it's very repeatable, then you put them everywhere.
That's right. And the other thing is, of course, islands are acutely aware of the impacts of climate change as well. There's nothing like having water lapping at your ankles, you know, wherever you look to be aware of the damage that we're doing and what we can do to try and improve upon that. But anyway, back to the story. I went to sea, arrived in America as a very young man. In fact, I went under the Golden Gate Bridge 7 times before I ever went over it, which I suppose is a little bit unusual. Since climbed it as well, and have now swum across it as well, just to sort of get the hat trick there. Not much else I can do at the Golden Gate Bridge except paint it, I suppose.
Walk across?
I have walked across it, yes, but that, I don't know, that seemed hardly worth mentioning when you've done the other things. And then, I'm a sort of an accidental immigrant to the United States. I think that's one of the great things about this country. You know, it is a land of opportunity. There's no doubt about that. And the other thing is, it's a land where, especially at that time, merit was very important. It's a meritocracy. If you can get something done and if you're prepared to work hard and if you have the luck to be physically and mentally strong, you can do very, very well here. And I must say the country's been kind to me. It's provided great opportunities for me. I've been involved in a variety of different businesses. I've funded and grown a couple of startups. I've operated publicly run companies and privately held companies, raised a lot of capital. So it's been a very diverse background for me. And I'm bound and determined to give back. You know, as we've already talked about from a climate point of view and reducing pollution and everything else, these are maybe not terribly popular ideas with large segments of the population, but nevertheless, they're important. It's rather like giving, you know, cod or nasty tasting medicine to someone who doesn't want it. They may not like it, but it's still the best thing to be doing for them, and so one does it. And then beyond that, I'm an employer. You know, I look to employ people, particularly people who might not have such an easy slice at the, or such an easy go at the pie. Again, we're a meritocracy here, but I think we seek out merit in places where others don't. So we have combat veterans, disabled workers, minorities, immigrants, God forbid, ex-convicts, you know, anyone who is prepared to really work hard and really be a contributor, they have an opportunity here.
When I was talking to Jigar Shah just a couple of weeks ago, he used that as his biggest success that he was most proud of, the people he was able to give jobs that are now in the energy community.
Yeah. That, I mean, look, that is terribly exciting, particularly in light of the fact that a lot of the people that we hire have what you might refer to as old world skills, manufacturing skills. We have welders. We have, you know, people with electrical skills. And these are kind of old world skills, but we're putting them to work in the new industries that will carry us all forward. And these are not short term construction jobs. These are long term skilled positions. We're training people. And as I tell the people who work here all the time, you come here for a career, not a job. We give a little bit of equity to all of our employees who have been with us for longer than 6 months, and again, who merit it. They get that around Christmas time. And then we teach them skills too. So if you want a career in something that's really important, something you can be really proud of, you can come here.
That's fantastic. Can you talk about some of the challenges that you've had?
How long is this podcast?
Not long enough to talk about all of them.
No, look, none of this is easy. And I, you know, I don't think it's easy for anybody to start and grow a business. It's hard work. You know, there are always capital constraints. There are always resource constraints. But for us particularly, if you look at what we did, we took a brand new industry, which is the electrification of transportation. And by the way, one which I think will be one of the biggest paradigm shifts in the history of humanity. And that sounds like hyperbole, but it isn't. It will be one of the biggest paradigm shifts in the history of humanity. We took that brand new industry that no one understood. And then we said, let's come up with a brand new way of addressing a brand new industry. People already don't understand the industry. Let's give them something that they really can't understand.
Some might call you a bit crazy.
And, yeah, exactly. And then let's try and market that. Let's try and make that commercial, right? It's very hard to do that because you're dealing with a sort of two stages of lack of understanding. And as we all know, consumers don't like buying stuff they don't understand. So lack of education has been by far the biggest hurdle we've had to overcome, because lack of education has contributed to it being harder in the early days to sell our product. People used to say to me all the time, this is a great concept. It used to drive me crazy. I'd be like, it's not a concept. It's out working in the street. You don't get tire marks like this on a concept. You know, this is a real product. Makes it harder for people to adopt it from a customer point of view, and then it makes it harder to raise the necessary money to grow the company as well. I'm bound to say, though, we're beyond that now. We have New York City's our biggest customer, for goodness sakes. In California, Caltrans is our biggest customer. These are not exactly sort of rushing early adopters of crazy technology. People don't call our product a concept anymore. They don't ask us if it works anymore. They ask us if they can have it next month. And that's been a big paradigm shift for us. But that lack of education, lack of understanding on all levels, investor, customer, employee, broader market, that's been the greatest hurdle to overcome.
I remember a launching event that you did. I think it was at Fiat with the 500E. Yeah. And you had big screen TVs that you were powering with the energy.
Yes.
And your idea was that you were going to have advertising.
Yes.
That was going to help get you increased revenue, or help get the customer increased revenue.
Yes.
How
yes.
did that work out?
Well, it's been a long road, but the news is good where that is concerned. I have for a long time felt that EV charging is, or electric vehicle charging, the fueling of electric vehicles, is an industry where there's a great deal of value, but no money. as yet. And so whenever I see an industry where there's a great deal of value but no money, that's just a strong indication to me that we've failed to monetize the value as yet. And selling kilowatt hours is great if you're a utility. If you're a large monopoly, entrenched monopoly, if you've got, you know, PUC and others making sure that everybody pays, then
guaranteed, baby.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you're a smaller business, selling kilowatt hours is a very difficult way to make a living. And that's what EV charging is, essentially. At the end of the day, that's the commodity. Well, then we've got to say to ourselves, maybe the kilowatt hour is not where the money is. Maybe there's something else, because there is so much value in this. People need to fuel their vehicles. We're not going to be able to do it at home, like everybody says. I mean, in California, maybe 1 in 7 people can fuel their vehicles at home. They're going to have to fuel at work. They're going to have to fuel out in the street. And if we're going to do that, we need to find a way of monetizing, particularly the public charging infrastructure. People are very used to this idea of having advertising-funded infrastructure. Who doesn't have a free Gmail account? Who doesn't use Google Maps? Who doesn't use Waze? Who doesn't use any of these products, all of which are advertising funded? And so, yes, the idea of using some kind of outdoor media to fund the deployment of EV charging infrastructure makes a great deal of sense. And it's only one of the business models. I think the great innovators that make up American businesses will come up with other great business models as well. But to get to where we are with it, last year we signed an agreement with Outfront Media. Outfront is the US's largest and fifth largest in the world outdoor media company. And you'll have seen their billboards and you'll have seen their screens all over the place. But actually what we're doing with them is a much more interesting program. We're going to replicate sponsorship and naming right types deals so that there will come a time when you are able to drive on sunshine in US cities, environmental impact free, guilt free, and the best free of all, free. Because a corporate sponsor is making that available to you. And as I said, that's only one of the business models that will support this, but it's the one that we're most fond of, and you're going to see that happening very soon. And frankly, what could be better? I mean, the average American spends $5,000 a year on gasoline and maintenance for their internal combustion engine vehicle. Just imagine if those $5,000 went back into the local tax basis because they weren't paying for fuel. I mean, it's just a gift that keeps on giving. We can send money to Saudi Arabia or wherever else, or we can have all that money go into the local economy and have people driving emissions-free, guilt-free, and free.
And driving on sunshine.
And driving on sunshine, yeah. And by the way, they'll be doing it using our products, which is what I'm most happy about.
You talked about a number of successes already. You're in good with New York, Caltrans. You talked about employing so many people, and now your advertising capabilities. Mm-hmm. What success are you most proud of?
It is this driving on sunshine thing. It's just, I hate to say anything's impossible, but it's very hard for me to think of anything that I could be doing which could be more impactful than this. And when I say I, of course, it's the team here. Every one of us is producing products. Look, Lee, I go to New York City and I see New York Police Department cars driving on sunshine because of our products. I'm in California. I see Caltrans vehicles driving on sunshine because of our products. We're about to deploy our first full-size 40-foot electric passenger bus charging program. People will be driving in down the road in full-size 40-foot passenger buses on sunshine because of our products. We're about to deploy our first DC fast charging solution in rest areas in California. People will be driving down the highway on sunshine because of our products. And again, if you go back out into space and look down on this beautiful, fragile jewel floating around out here and think, hey, people can have mobility, they can have comfort, they can have plenty, they can have whatever they want, and they can do it without wrecking this magnificent place, and I played a role in that, hard to get better.
I agree. What is your vision for the future?
From a very high level, it is plenty. It is providing plenty, but doing it in a way that doesn't involve destruction. And there are so many reasons for that. First of all, I do care about people. I mean, I've spent a good deal of time living and working around the world. That necessarily means that you're not always in places like we're sitting right now where everyone's rich. Even the poor people here are rich. I've seen people scraping by in a way that's almost unimaginable. In this part of the world.
I was in India. I saw children playing on the top of garbage heaps.
Exactly. And I've seen plenty of that sort of thing myself. It's natural that those people want more. it's very unnatural to expect them to care about the environmental impact of wanting more. The world, the planet, can probably support a billion Americans. Today, there are already 300 million Americans, which gives us room for another 700 million Americans. And yet we know we've got 7-8 billion people on the planet, all of whom want to live like Americans. So this is insupportable, insupportable. I worry that that will lead to war. I worry that that will lead to famine. I worry that that will lead to decimation of everything that we should value. So if we can provide plenty to people, but without destroying things, if those people, those other 7 billion, can have the things that they want, but we can do it without destroying this beautiful place that we all call home, then that's a real win. We haven't told people, no, you know, you can live in poverty while we enjoy the fruits of the planet because we don't want you wrecking the place. No, we need everybody to have what they need so they don't desperately want to go and take it from other people or take it from the mother planet, as it were. And so that's what we should all be focused on. We should all be focusing on not ways of preventing people from doing things or preventing people from having things, but finding ways to provide plenty to everybody so that they don't want to fight each other for it, they don't want to kill for it, and they don't want to destroy the planet that we live on to get it.
Is it achievable? Are we going to get there?
Well, so I'll tell you, I had dinner with my wife a few months ago, and she said, I don't know what it is with you. Everything's either fantastic or terrible. And I said, I'm glad you understand. Thank you. And frankly, that's the way I feel about this. I'm confused. There are mornings when I wake up and I think we haven't got hope in hell. It's just the devastation's happening too quickly. The advances are happening too quickly. We won't mature quickly enough to play with the toys that have been given to us. And then there are other days when I see a few of our products rolling out here on a truck and I see a car driving on sunshine in New York City. And I think to myself, you know, we're part of nature. And nature has a way of healing itself. Nature has a way of finding a way through, extinctions notwithstanding. But maybe we can get this done. Maybe we can win. But I'll say this. This is a sort of a final comment on that. Whether or not we win, whether or not we end up overcoming the great challenges that are ahead of us, it's very important to me, and I think it should be very important to everybody, to be fighting on the right side.
Isn't that what we do?
Even
we
if
fight.
We lose.
We have to fight. That's even what we're all we about, lose. Right?
Exactly.
You don't just give up and say, okay, no. I'll just think about me for 10 more years.
No, that's exactly right. So be fighting on the right side, even if there's no guarantee of winning. Isn't that a quintessential American thing anyway? I mean, you know, you're supposed to be looking after the downtrodden, and that's what we should be doing.
This is a crazy analogy, but I always thought of America as Superman.
Yeah.
Let me explain. You know, truth, justice, and the American way.
Yes.
That we were the good guys, and that's ridiculous. We're a world. There are many countries that have incredible people, incredible cultures, incredible governments. But growing up, that was my thought, that we would always be the good guys.
Yes. And you know what?
The good people.
Yes. And you know what? That is the sort of thing, frankly, that doesn't necessarily have to be true, but it has to be believed in. We should all view America that way. We should view America as the home to the downtrodden. We should view America as the defender of the free. Even if it's not always been true, it's important that we look at it that way. And frankly, the greatest victory that this country could ever score could be not just saving Europe from Nazi tyranny or from the Iron Curtain or anything else like that. What if America ends up being the nation that saves the world from itself? It should be. We have the money, we have the technology, we have the innovation, and we have the power, but we lack the will.
We have the legacy of having the will and using it for the right things. It's just a matter of turning the ship around.
I agree. I totally agree.
Based on what you said, I was also inspired to talk about my feeling that we are on the cusp of amazing things. The smartphone, that's an incredible device. Solar, what's happening with solar? What's happening with wind? What's happening with energy storage? Just in so many areas of technology, automated vehicles, electric cars, there's so much that we're doing and that we have and that we can do. It makes me think, of course, we're going to succeed. But on the other hand, there's so much going wrong in the world right now. It feels like one or the other is going to win soon, that we're at that inflection point.
It all comes down to what we choose to do with the gifts that have been bestowed upon us. So you think, you talk about the smartphone, you talk about solar and storage. Technology is advancing rapidly, and people are getting more and more things, stuff in their hands, basically. It just depends on what we choose to do with it. We can concentrate our efforts on consuming more and more plastic and throwing more of it in the landfill and more of it in the ocean. We can concentrate our efforts on using technology to get us into bigger and more powerful SUVs, using our technology to get better at fracking and drilling across boundaries and doing all these other things. We can use our technology in that way. Or we can say, these gifts that have been given to us can allow us to have all the comfort and security of the things that we get from plastic and SUVs and all that sort of stuff, but let's put our focus on growing the technology solutions, the gifts that have been given to us, in ways which will heal, make the place better, not hurt.
Take care of that emerald in the sky.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Do you have any questions for me?
You know, I'm having known you and for a few years now and seen what you're doing, I'm just sort of very intrigued by this decision that you've made to eschew money and riches and then go about doing something which is important. So that there's a luxury in that, it has to be said, because you must have made the right decisions in life where you've got to the point where you can afford to do that. But I'm interested, what was your change? I mean, what drove you to doing that?
There were times in my life, and I'm very fortunate, most of my working life, I enjoyed my job. I enjoyed what I did. I got up in the morning and I wanted to go to work. Mm. But then I experienced some years where I did not. And I realized that maximizing each day of my life was more important than making more money. Mm. That's a very luxurious thing to be able to say. But I focused on getting there, and I got there, and I am now doing what I want to do and what I believe in and making every hour count. I feel great about it.
Seems unlikely that any of us will lie on our deathbeds and I mean, I know it's an old cliche, but who lies on their deathbed and says, I wish I had more money or I wish I spent more time at the office? And it seems that you have elected to do something which is perhaps more important than that.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to say?
Drive on sunshine.
Drive on sunshine. Yeah. Okay, well, let me wrap this up, and I'm going to wrap this up with a rap. You're very proud that you are a Scot. Your father fought for the environment, and you never forgot. You do a lot of things. The things that you does, you were kind of inspired by Aldrin, Buzz. One of the things that I thought was kind of cuter is that you admitted you were a former polluter. You admitted that there are times when you don't even try, like when you meet a big oil guy. It's one of the most favorite slogans and taglines of mine. You are popularizing driving on sunshine.
Well, I wasn't expecting that.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I was not expecting that. That was great. Do you always do that rap at the end of it?
Desmond's focus on mass production and sub-4-minute deployment of EV charging is world-changing. And with the density of energy storage increasing and price declining, the efficiency of solar increasing, and his manufacturing capabilities improving as more units are produced, we could see tens of millions of EV ARCs deployed across the world without the need for billions of dollars of investment in infrastructure to get electricity to the endpoints. Let's face it, the sun is already there. And speaking of the sun, if you are in San Diego and want some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. And if you want to improvise raps like me, or hopefully much better, consider taking a class at an improv workshop in your town. My training in improvisation helps me face the fear and let out the lee. To confirm specific show dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. Desmond's vision of plenty for everyone without destroying the Earth in the process is beautiful. It would be wonderful to see a world where we all drive on sunshine, survive on sunshine, thrive on sunshine, made possible by innovative solutions like the EV ARC that help to mitigate climate change.